Hi, and welcome to Common Denominator, straight up conversations with me, Moshe Popak. Each week I chat with pioneers, innovators, and truly inspirational people from all walks of life to learn the steps they take to turn their ideas into reality. My goal is to empower you to dive in, be bold, and take profound steps toward realizing your own potential. This week's guest is photographer Marisha Kemp, whose subjects include Bruce Springsteen, Al Pacino, and Gloria Steinem. She'll share what it takes to capture a great photo, what photography has taught her about humanity, and how she uses the camera lens to help her overcome profound shyness. Next.
This is Common Denominator, straight up conversations with Moshe Popak. Now, here's Moshe.
Marisha, thank you so much for joining us here on Common Denominator.
Thank you so much for having me.
So take us back to the beginning of your journey with photography. What inspired you to get into photography?
I think I don't know if it's what got me into photography so much as what made it such a sustaining part of my life was more the process than the product. In the sense that I have tremendous social anxiety. I was an incredibly shy kid. Sure. Unless there was some sort of weird social justice issue at my school, then I would just go all out. And having a camera suddenly gave me this tool, this kind of entree into people, into worlds. It made there be just this natural, fully understood reason for me to be in someone's living room or in someone's life or in their space, you know, asking a zillion questions as opposed to I'm somewhat awkward but very curious.
So you had this tremendous level of shyness, and it was a tool that you used to break through that barrier.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, not break through that barrier 24/7, don't get me wrong, but break through that, you know, have moments of transcendence from that barrier. And it made things sort of a grand adventure. And when I was young, you know, I had a camera, I picked up a camera. Then in my late teens, early 20s, I sort of rapid fire dropped out of college, right, as a teenager, and did a few years of sort of crazy living. I drove around America by myself, and I worked intermittently as a carny at various carnivals.
That's cool.
Yeah, and I wish to God that I had a camera that year, because, like, I've never, approached the world with that, like, pure sense of raw wonder as I did in that year.
Sure.
And also just because the people I knew and the things I saw that I remember, you know, are phenomenal. Then I ended up working in the pesticide industry and living this awful existence where it was just one identical day leading into the next with no purpose and no way out, you know?
So in other words, it seems to me that kind of who you were inside and what you were presenting in reality was two different things, it seems.
Oh, no, eventually it wasn't. Yeah. Like, eventually I would go, I would ring the doorbell to let someone know that I'd be spraying their trees and shrubs, and I was just so depressed that I just started bawling on the front, you know. And that's when I said, okay, you know what, like, this is clearly not the path. Like, I've got to go back to school, and what is it that I really love? Like, what is the thing that pulls me out of my depression? And that was photography. So from then on, you know, that was one track mind.
I really want to go into that a little bit, because I think of the words of courage. If I can let the listeners know about the ideas of courage, because here you are, it's really tough for you to be out in the public and, you know, with this heavy reality of shyness, and that yet you, I guess, created some tool using photography to go ahead and...
Right, because the idea is now, why be self-conscious when it's not about me? It's not about me anymore. It's about this thing that I'm co-creating that I think is pretty damn cool. And so everything else is sort of irrelevant, you know?
Right. So you're going outside of yourself, because the whole, I guess, the brain is going, you know, all the fears, all the anxieties, all the shyness is all within you. But if you create some other thing outside of yourself, that will be able to neutralize.
It neutralizes the fear. It neutralizes the... All my other issues. Like, I don't have to think about what I look like. I don't have to think about how I'm coming off. I don't have to think about, you know, there's no reason to be self-conscious, because I'm not existing at that moment to be, to entertain, to look a certain way. I'm doing something, and I will not be stopped. You know?
Right. Because I think of tools of, I always love that movie with Tom Hanks, Castaway, when, you know, he made the ball, Wilson, right? So it's the idea of life hacks in a way, whatever you can create for you to here in this world function and produce in reality, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's, you know, this is a super universal kind of idea that, like, when you are too young and too fresh in the world to be in a place where you're like, I'm going to do the work, you know, instead you kind of intuitively find what works and what doesn't for you. Yeah. And you intuitively sort of lean into these life hacks just because it is where you function. It's that space in which you function and function well.
So I've personally, my family's been able to experience your photography, and it was truly mind-blowing. And I think that it's a tremendous gift, but I'd like you to just maybe explain a little bit about your process to get people to where you need them to be, that it'll be truly amazing photos.
Well, first I need to get them to agree to be in the picture. That's number one. So that, you know, it's a varying degree of hustle. I think as I've come along in years and have been doing it more and more, it's like I know that I must project and carry some sort of confidence, because now people just sort of obey my authority. But at the same time, as I get older, I give more and more space for the other person to define their own self-presentation.
So when you see somebody, do you know right away that you're going to be able to connect with them through your camera lens?
Yeah, if I were walking around the beach or walking around a fair or some like public space and looking for people to photograph, like, of course I would know who I could vibe with. You know, I mean, it's very primal. It's odd to put this stuff into words because it's even more primal than here's a visual image I can't put into words. Like, it's literally energy. People have energy, and you're, you know, getting like, who's on my energy level? Who can I connect with in this way? And if we have share the energy, that picture will result, you know.
What would you say would make, in your mind, a photo great?
If we're talking about other people's photos, or if I'm looking at photos, what I really appreciate is a photo that gives you a sense of wonder, that makes you really pause and think and want to know, what is this story? Like, it's telling this greater story. What is that story? And if I don't know, can I construct my own story for this and be just as happy with it? I used to talk ad nauseum about, there's a sociologist named George Richter who talked about the McDonaldization of America, right? Which is like, when you drive down the highway, every exit you get off, before you get off the exit, there's a sign so you can pick your fast food. And you know when you go into McDonald's or you go into Burger King, if everything's working right, it's not going to be a memorable experience. It's going to be exactly what you expect and by design. Like, that food is going to taste exactly like what you think it will. You know, the interior will look exactly how you think. The bathrooms will be exact level of cleanliness you expect, everything. So what is missing from the world is a sense of wonder. What's missing from the world is going somewhere and seeing something that makes you ask questions. Yeah. So to me, it's like the best pictures are the ones that are put you in that headspace as opposed to the McDonald's headspace.
And it's interesting. I think of the analogy of the musician. So there's the musician, the Juilliard, the Ivy League of music, right? So they're perfect in the box, A, B, C. You know, they're just doing whatever they need to do. And then there's the person who goes to the piano and they just jump on it. They need a way to express themselves, and it's true essence. And it comes off the piano, and for me personally, I love that. Speaking of music, you photographed numerous celebrities, including one of your heroes, Bruce Springsteen. And I love this story because it wasn't a standard photo shoot like you usually do. You went on a mission to make it happen.
So I knew that Bruce Springsteen was a musical guest on SNL, right?
Sure.
So in the back of my head, I'm like, and I don't even know where this thought came from because it's so ridiculous and so impossible. After they tape the show, they have an after party, and the after party is in a different location every time. And maybe if you're some Uber fan, you can anticipate it. I won't say on the podcast, there's a hack, but I didn't have a car, so that wasn't working. So I was taking the subway into Midtown Manhattan, and then it was like, figure that out from where, you know, it could be anywhere. But nonetheless, I just felt this, you know, like, I'm going to do it. Like, it'll work out.
Yeah.
right? I'm going to find one of 1,000 restaurants that this thing's at, you know, at 2 a.m. Like,
right, the mission.
It's going to work out. The mission. It's going to work out. And so I got on the subway. And so I start Googling just where were other after parties. There's 3 or 4 that there was an article about, you know, that mentions the name. First article comes up. I don't know this restaurant, so I can't shout out to that. I do not remember. I remember like visually what it looked like. And sure enough, like I walk over to this restaurant again. Like there's absolutely no reason why this after party should be there or why any of this should be happening. And there's people standing outside holding Bruce Springsteen records.
Wow.
And I'm like, I can't explain this. Like, this is God. This had nothing, you know, I can't, how could I take credit for that? So I sort of just idle over to the smoking section and, you know, I'm not holding a Bruce Springsteen record. So how do you know I'm not just, you know, a grip on the show or whatever? I mean,
sure.
I definitely look like I could be, you know, lighting something, you know? And so I just kind of idle into the smoking section, start chatting with people, like, you know, they go in, I go in. They think I'm like some grip or something, you know, I hold the cue cards, they don't know. But then I see Springsteen and he's at the table and he's at the table with Lorne and you can't approach at the table with Lorne, like, you know, it's something has got to be on fire before you're going up to the table with Lorne, you know, and I'm certainly not sabotaging myself here with this giant camera that I've hidden, you know. So finally he gets up to go and I'm like, that's my moment. You know, and I marched right up to Bruce Springsteen and I don't remember specifically what I said. I mean, again, I think that was probably just God speaking through me because I have no idea what I said.
Wow.
But he was like, yep, sure. And, you know, awesome. Posed for like 2 or 3 frames and, you know, the security, in one of the frames, there's an arm going through and then, you know, Bruce like is like, no, it's cool. You know, and the arm disappears.
Yeah. I love that.
And that was it. Yeah. And it was like, because that was my hero and that was my idol. And there was absolutely no reason on earth why that should have worked out, you know? So
getting that essence of people, you know, all these years built up, right? That's your idol. And coming from the shyness and then having the courage to go ahead and do that. I know also you don't just photograph celebrities. It's people from all walks of life. And do you go about it the same creative process with just from a human standpoint?
From a human standpoint, absolutely. I mean, obviously, if you're, you get much more time to spend with non-celebrities. You get a far more, you know, longer and more intimate experience most of the time. And especially in terms of what you can shoot.
I know also you had quite a journey since COVID, right? You're going on a little bit of journey. Maybe you can take us a little bit of that.
All right. So get ready, Twitter, to drag me for my complete lack of ethics. So as soon as I had recovered from COVID myself, just putting that out there, masks, antibodies, the whole nine. So I had sort of in my own head had it like, oh, I'm going to go down, like do some little road trip, like go to some biker stuff, whatever, you know.
Cool.
And so I started to drive and I'm in a Walmart parking lot in Virginia, in the middle of nowhere, Virginia, when like, that's it. Like the world's shutting down. It's not opening up.
So in other words, you're during this time, you're on this road trip.
Yeah. But at the beginning so I didn't have a thing. It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to go out and document da da da. You know, I had no agenda because it was, nobody knew what was happening. Nobody knew, you know, you couldn't. And I'm not like that kind of photojournalist mind that I'm immediately like, oh, let me just, you know, get the relevant stories. But then somehow I Forrest Gumpianly landed myself in a million relevant stories anyway.
What were the top 2 places that you ended up that was relevant over the past?
Okay, well, my favorite 2 places were Cheyenne, Wyoming and Sturgis. Mm-hmm. But the really politically relevant places that I was, Seattle Autonomous Zone, when that was its own country.
Wow.
Now it's returned to being part of the United States. And I was in Portland, too.
And I know from what you've told me, your experience in Portland was rough for you emotionally.
I'm not a Portlander. I don't want to like disparage the whole of the city when I say this. But, you know, I was there when they were gassing people at the, you know, and all this. So, I felt constantly surrounded by this incredibly, incredibly dark energy the whole time I was there.
Wow.
And I don't think that I felt anywhere close to, not even emotionally whole, but like on the road to emotionally whole until I was in Sturgis. And I didn't feel safe until I was in Sturgis.
I think it's fair to say that you're an empath, which is part of what makes you a great photographer. But with that, there's also a heavy price to pay.
I think it's that sensitivity has, you know, it's beautiful on the one hand. I cannot imagine living without it.
Yes.
I think that life would just be so dull and colorless and clinical without it. But at the same time, it involves a lot of like absorbing other people's energy and other people's mood. And so I think like again, and whatever those coping mechanisms are, you start out when you're a kid, when you're not conscious of any kind of process. And I know so many people who started out in life hypersensitive and just shut down to be able to shut that off. And once the wall is there, you're not really controlling what comes in and out.
So that happened to me, by the way, when I was, so I knew I had this as 2 years old and I would feel everything. And when I was five, my parents went through a divorce and it was a pretty bad divorce. So that was where I went numb. So finally, and then I ended up marrying my wife 16 years ago, and we began our journey to unpack, So to unpack, and today, where I thought it was my curse, that super sensitivity, today, I got to tell all the listeners, today, it's my biggest blessing, and that's correct, and I love that I am that way, that I feel everything. It's intense some days, but I'd rather be that way. And it's the opposite of what, you know, the system and society says. And hopefully we'll continue to create a community of authentic, unapologetic people.
Right? Yes. No, absolutely. I mean, that's everything. It's like, if you go to Waiting for Godot, right? Okay, here's a paper I wrote in French in high school. Can I do that now? No way, Jose. All they have is each other. Like, what else is there but other people? What else is there but, you know, tapping into energy levels?
So, Marisha, as we say goodbye, is there one thing along your journey that really resonates with you the most?
So, number one, like, I shoot in a very fashion sort of way. I light everything. It's artificial. Like, I don't shoot like a journalist. I'm not a fly on the wall. It's collaborative. People know it's happening, blah, blah, blah. But my mission from the beginning was to shoot people that... And now the world is becoming more inclusive, but that who are not the people who are ordinarily photographed in that manner, you know?
Yeah.
And I think as I get older, you know, of course you constantly keep questioning, like, what even is photography? Like you're still in the end beholden to physical appearances and beholden to the language of appearance. But I think some of the greatest people in the world, to me, when I feel like I've encountered somebody who's really, really holy, that is someone who is just looking at people as a soul, on a soul level, and like skipping the rest.
Wow, Marisha, that was truly amazing. Thank you for sharing that. So if the listeners want to see your photographs and learn more about your work, how can they do that?
So what I highly recommend the audience do is you can go to the website, marishacamp.com, but even better, you can go on my Instagram, at marisharocks, and text me. I will text you back.
Thank you so much for coming in. Hopefully it inspires people to be bold and be courageous and find the tools that they need in order to present and be their authentic selves. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hope you enjoyed this episode of Common Denominator. Join me next week as my guest will be Dr. Ilan Barinholtz, the co-director of the Machine Perception and Cognitive Robotics Lab at Florida Atlantic University. He'll share his insight on exciting developments in the world of artificial intelligence and how we can improve our capacity for knowledge and our quality of life. Have a great week, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks for listening to the Common Denominator podcast. Join us next week for another inspiring, impactful, and empowering conversation. To learn more about Moshe, head to moshepopak.com. If you enjoyed this episode, feel free to share it. And we'd be grateful if you could rate, review, and subscribe to the show.